You're listening to A Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott alongside Dennis O'Hare. Some Atlantans don't have access to fresh foods because, well, simply they don't live close enough to a grocery store or a farmer's market. And it's something that the USDA defines as a food desert. Well, Georgia State graduate student Nicole Ryerson has been researching the availability of fresh food, and she's been specifically looking at Southwest Atlanta. And Eugene Cook is a part of a nonprofit called Grow Where You Are, which aims to combat the fresh food shortage. And they're both in our Closer Look studios. Good afternoon. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you for being here.
Oh, Nicole, I want to start with you. You've been doing some research. This is nothing new for a lot of people, whether it's Atlanta or other areas across the country. When you talk about a food desert, fresh foods get a lot of hype. You know, we all want them. One might question, well, we know they're important, but just having access, period, to a grocery store or a farmer's market is really the issue that people need to take a look at. In your research, what have you been finding? Do people really want a farmer's market or a grocery store, or they just want both?
I think it's actually a little bit more complicated even than that. More than just a farmer's market or a grocery store, there's also ideas of mobile markets and being close to an actual garden, having interaction with the growers and the food itself. It's an education issue. It's not just about if I put a Walmart here, that's going to solve the problem. It might make it so there's access to food, but it doesn't really create a systemic network that really speaks to the social and economic issues that are in those neighborhoods that are also leading to these issues. I think that a lot of the dialogue's being opened up to local food because it does address those issues on various levels.
When you talk about the socioeconomic implications here, because it's easy to see that if you live in an underserved community, you may not have either one, a farmer's market or a grocery store. You may have the convenience store, which for some, that is their only source of getting groceries. And it may not be the freshest in terms of fruits, or if they even sell fruits or vegetables. The milk may be a little bit higher. What have you found in your research in terms of how to even begin to address that issue? You mentioned a lot of different implications. So where do you begin? Do you begin with community leaders? Do you begin with council, city council leaders? Where do you begin to have the conversation to get something done?
I think you don't have to have a conversation at one level. I think it needs to incorporate all of the levels at one time for it to really work. I know that there's different groups that are trying to start plans to put things like coolers into those markets, that those corner stores and those dollar stores that a lot of people get all of their main groceries from but don't have access to fresh foods. And by supplying fresh foods to them through basically supplying them with coolers that you bring in and keep the fresh food supply up for them and incorporate that education as well, those mobile markets and that sort of thing, so that you bring the food to them versus having to create a whole nother market, like having to create a whole nother Kroger or something like that. You take what already exists and you try to incorporate what's already going on.
Eugene, I want to pick up on that because one of the things Nicole said was that there's a lot more than just access to fresh food at stake here, that having the fresh food can actually address a number of problems in the community. Which ones do you see that, you know, where would you see a connection that folks might not think of ordinarily?
One of the main connections that our organization, Grow Where You Are, is addressing is the connection between land access and food access. Many times when we speak about food access, we're still talking about how to create consumers. And what Grow Where You Are focuses on is how to create stronger producers. Producers are generated when people have access to land, ownership of land, and in that space, they feel more compelled to develop it, to make it productive, to make it viable. And when we have land ownership in these communities, then people become much more politically engaged. So in the West End, Southwest Atlanta, we have a lot of different people coming in, becoming landowners, whereas there's a large residency of rental population, and they don't necessarily have the same kind of political voice when it comes to how the community is transformed.
Well, how do you make the land ownership happen, number one? And number two, in an urban area like the West End, is there enough land to produce the food that would be enough to make a difference?
Dennis, those are two great questions. I'll take the last one first. What we have started with is by addressing faith-based institutions. A lot of the churches in the area have own land. So we are at Good Shepherd Community Church. We have the Good Shepherd Agroecology Center right on the corner of Lawton and Lucille. And when we start with churches that already own land, then we start by creating a functional, productive example of what can be done when we have stewardship over our own land. What we also have done to address the first question is we've started the conversation around this idea. You can find it on YouTube under Grow Where You Are Farmhouse Project. And the idea is that in many urban areas, teachers and police officers are given access to homes in that area if they commit to serving in these underserved communities for 2 or 3 years. They are given homes with no down payment.
And so that's where you start the with home gardens, with those folks. Is that basically it?
We would start with committed urban farmers. We already have a network of urban farmers who are committed and have demonstrated 3 or 4 years of success, and they're still renting. So now we place urban farmers, not just anybody in a home, but look at urban farmers as public servants like police officers.
So we have the education, then you change the mindset, and then you bring in the partnership. So those are three key areas there. Nicole, I want to come back to you because you've done a lot of research over the years. What was surprising to you when you looked at these food deserts in Southwest Atlanta? Were you surprised at, because you're fairly young, were you surprised that there were so many food deserts? And could you go back and look historically? Because decades ago, there were grocery stores. There was a thriving economic community in some of these neighborhoods. And then we saw it shift and where there could be for unemployment, white flight, whatever you want to call it, we saw a shift. What did you learn in your research there?
Well, specifically when I helped do a food shelf survey in Vine City, Ashview Heights area, that was really eye-opening for me in particular. It's one thing to see the data and understand it spatially. It's another thing to go into every single store that says Food Mart and it has no real food. We went around and we saw whether or not they had produce, whether they had something besides just white bread or whole milk and these sorts of things. And if they did, it seemed like for the most part it was, you know, one banana, and sometimes it was $3 for a banana. So even if they had access, it was it wasn't affordable, and it seemed like it wasn't being used. The only grocer in that area that really provided anything was the Walmart, which has a lot of controversy around that. So seeing it firsthand was really enlightening for me personally because I grew up in an area that I never had to worry about that sort of thing. But part of why I also never had to worry about it is I was lucky enough to always have access to a car. So transportation, I feel like I noticed because we made sure we did everything on foot, was something, a really important component. And I think it's something that more people are being aware of. I know that there's some in the Department of Transportation that have really acknowledged this and are moving to create steps to change this and make access just not, okay, we've put a grocery store here, but is there public transit that goes to it? Are there sidewalks that people can go? Are there crosswalks, bike lanes, all of these sorts of things that can really contribute to access?
You mentioned Walmart, and I'm now thinking of when Publix moved into the West End area right near Clark, Atlanta, there hadn't been a grocery store there in decades. And then Publix came in and then they were gone, I believe, within 3 years. And Walmart came in. But this is not really just an argument about whether it's good or bad to have Walmart, but it has added because that neighborhood didn't have anything. What do you say to some people who say, well, look, you now have Walmart. At least Walmart is making an attempt to come into an area that's been a food desert. But again, you mentioned it's a controversy. Some people don't like the big box stores, the Walmarts coming in. Is there enough neighborhood for everybody to get along and have this? Eugene?
Yes, absolutely, Rose. The important work about the local food systems is that, of course, we're going to have large grocery stores, and we also have got to transform ourselves into a more production-oriented society because 30% of the food that Georgians eat come from California. California is losing its water. I am a native of California, and 80% of the water that is used in California is used for agribusiness, large-scale commercial agriculture, and we are advocating small-scale agroecological practices so that people can produce food right where they live.
And people could also have options if they don't want to go to a Walmart or a neighborhood grocery, big chain grocery store.
But part of the implication in Rose's question is, if you even if you have people producing, or if you have the big box store coming in, no matter what, people have to want it. And is there enough education in the community, and Eugene, I'll start with you on that, to have people say, okay, there is this fresh food, I'm going to go buy it, so that whether it's the farmer or the big box store, they're going to keep providing it to the community?
Great question. There's always room for more education, Dennis, and there are a couple different groups that we work with that help to advocate for that. Maitu Foods is a plant-based meal service provider that provides education and nutrition education as well. Habesha Incorporated has a Habesha Works program, and we've seen them actively get people not only involved in growing food, but in having better ideas of how to select food. So when we look at the education, one of the main ways we can educate is by being present in these communities instead of coming from another community and trying to serve it. So we have set up the Agroecology Center right across from the West End Park. It's visible from the I-20 freeway, and just having the visibility in the community of seeing food grown gets youth and elders connecting to that process.
So Nicole, is there evidence, statistical evidence, that if you build it, they will come?
If they build it, I think you need to incorporate what Eugene was saying. It's not just if you put a grocer there, people all of a sudden buy fresh foods. If they've never, you know, experienced what it's like to cook with these fresh produce, then they're not all of a sudden just going to pick it up. It's also a matter of knowing how to budget. A lot of times people do more processed foods because they can only get to the grocery store once a month. And so they need something that's going to be able to store for a long period of time.
And a lot of times of the year, fresh food's more expensive.
Right, exactly. But if you keep it local and keep it seasonal, it makes it so that people can understand how to eat properly. And I think another issue to that is also making sure to get it at a younger age. There's organizations like Captain Planet that come into schools and help educate kids as young as, you know, kindergarten. It's a K-12 program. I know that Grower You Are, they go into different schools. They've got educational gardens where you can go in, and these kids can actually feel what a tomato is and what it is to be ripe and know how to eat it. And then they want those foods. If doing a garden in an elementary school and they get to grow their own food and then they see it in their cafeteria later and like, I helped grow that, they're going to be more invested in it.
And even if it's something as small as starting with a community garden, Eugene, can you talk about if someone's listening and saying, well, I would like to just start a community garden just to sort of see how people will react to it? How do you go about helping them, and what should they do?
Yeah, that's a great place to jump off, and I'd like to say that having partnership with Nicole Ryerson and the work that she's been doing has been great over the years, just to give us some context. And there were two very powerful community gardens in Southwest Atlanta, the Ashview Community Garden and the Westview Community Garden, both of which have been removed due to political and instability in Southwest Atlanta around food access issues.
What do you mean?
They have been bulldozed. And so this is a really important issue. These were community-based, community-grown projects. Ashview Community Garden and Westview Community Garden. Ashview was removed by the Atlanta Beltline, and the Westview was removed by the FDIC. So when we look at this situation, and then we have funders and foundations that say they're interested in food access in these communities, our communities, then what they can do first is fund what's already there. Instead of coming in and starting new initiatives, the West End Farmers Market on Sunday has been run by a crew of volunteers for years, and yet we have foundations that are coming in saying they want to start community farmers markets in this area, but they don't want to fund the ones that are already existing. So that's the best thing we can do, is grow them from the ground up. And then when funders come into our areas and set up these organizations, demand that they come and first fund what is already existing. So we're looking for exciting partnerships with Georgia Food Oasis if they are willing and committed to fund initiatives that have been grown from the community themselves.
Nicole, quick question, and maybe it's one we should have asked at the beginning. When you're doing research, how do you define a food desert? What are the factors, either demographically, statistically, in terms of how many miles to a store that sells fresh produce, that makes an area a food desert?
I personally actually don't like necessarily using the term food desert, because for me it's really convoluted, because if you go by the USDA standard, it's a mile radius to a grocery store or a large farmer's market. There's studies that have been done. There was one done by Georgia Tech speaking on how Truly Living Well, which is a large garden downtown, is within a mile radius, is in this food desert, which for me doesn't make much sense. How can it be a food desert if there's this large garden? So for me, I think that the dialogue needs to be changed to not necessarily just incorporate grocery stores. I try to shift it more positive when I'm looking in my own work. Not necessarily, we know that food deserts exist, we know that this is a problem, but how do we shift that conversation, which is why I really like organizations like Food Oasis, which makes it so that we're striving for something versus just fixing one problem.
Is there an area, whether it's even here in Georgia or even across the country, that we've seen programs like you all are talking about where it's working and it's working well, that maybe city leaders or anyone else could look to say, okay, this is our model, this is our template, let's look at this and let's bring it to the Atlanta area?
I think there's a couple different areas. I know that Oakland, Detroit, Philadelphia have really thriving local food movements, but every municipality is different. Atlanta's really unique because we're not the city of Atlanta. We're really this five-county metropolis.
Sure.
So it has to be kind of addressed differently. Something a little closer to home, Lovejoy has created this really amazing garden system that is funded by the city. And it's 14 acres, and they've produced, I think, over 80,000 pounds of food that they've just given away to their community. And it's something that the municipality has actually invested in and has found has really been an anchor for their community to build up, like we talked about, socially, economically, and change a lot of those issues.
We've been talking to Georgia State graduate student Nicole Ryerson and Eugene Cook with Grow Where You Are about, I know you don't like the term food desert, but how about this, access to fresh foods.
Yes.